Welcome to the Chengdu Gaming Podcast. I am Austin, and I'm joined here with Charlie.
What's up? Hello.
And we wanted to talk a little bit about Battle Royale today, just with things blowing up over the last few years, specifically recently with Apex Legends.
Yeah, I guess this is the most recent phenomenon within the Battle Royale space. First, there was PUBG in 2017, then there was Fortnite in 2018, and it looks like 2019, this year, might be the year of Apex taking the mantle of the predominant Battle Royale game from Fortnite.
Yeah, and it really kind of came out of nowhere as a huge surprise and free-to-play from EA, not loaded with annoying microtransactions or anything. I mean, they're there, but it's not in your face or annoying. It's really a surprising move from EA.
Yeah, a lot of things about the release of Apex Legends are really surprising, not just that it's a free-to-play game, the lack of really annoying microtransactions, the loot box system. I mean, there have been some complaints about it, but I would say in general, the complaints seem to be a lot more muted than they were in other games from Activision or Ubisoft or other EA games.
Yeah, such as Battlefront's loot box bullshit. That was like a huge controversy.
Yeah, that was a huge one, the Star Wars game.
Yeah.
And also, this is a wave we've been kind of riding for a long time. We recorded a podcast on PUBG quite a long time ago, which actually led to me being a guest on a podcast run by some friends of mine, which I hold in very high regard, which is the China Tech Talk podcast. It was actually almost exactly 1 year ago that I joined them on their podcast to talk about PUBG in China. And there was all this discussion about the growth of the Battle Royale genre. And they asked me a question, which is funny to look back on, which was, will Fortnite take over the number one position from PUBG in the year 2018? And I thought the answer to that would be no.
Yeah.
Because PUBG just seemed like it was so far ahead, and it seemed like Fortnite was so obviously derivative. And it's really interesting to look back on that. And I think it demonstrates how little I knew at the time then, how much we all knew, you know, about Battle Royale games at the time. And I think Apex is sort of another moment where I'm thinking, and I feel like everyone is kind of thinking, wow, there's still a lot we don't know about this space. And Apex just kind of came out of nowhere and was a big surprise, and now it's a smash hit. And now we're sort of re-guessing a lot of our assumptions about what's going to be popular, which direction is Battle Royale going to go in, and how sustained of a fad is this going to be? Is it even a fad at all?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's grown past a fad. I mean, it's been going on since about 2012 that Battle Royale games started. And we had Minecraft starting out with a Minecraft mod with, was it Minecraft Survival Games or something?
I think it was originally called Hunger Games.
I think it was Survival Games so that they didn't run into any issues because of the movie.
It was Hunger Games first, okay. And then they changed the name because of the copyright issue.
Right.
But it was the Hunger Games movie which popularized that Minecraft mod and I think the larger Battle Royale space.
Right.
I mean, maybe we should start back at the beginning and just start with
the movie, with
a definition. Well, actually, so the movie, you know, the Japanese horror movie titled Battle Royale, that's definitely like a notable thing to mention. Obviously, it's the namesake of this entire video game genre.
Right.
But the history of Battle Royale sort of predates that movie by hundreds of years. The term Battle Royale originally,
yeah.
Battle Royale, not Battle Royale, implied a fight that was fit for royalty and thus described large combative events. Specifically to describe cockfights.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Expanded in the 18th century to include human fights, including fisticuffs combat between a large number of people and seagoing battles between equally matched armadas. So this term goes back, Battle Royal, to, you know, 19th century, 18th century, I mean, hundreds of years ago. And it was, the idea was sort of brought into modern culture with the release of the 2000 Japanese film, which is titled Battle Royale, which is based on the 1999 book by Kushin Takami.
Right. Have you read the book?
I have.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. So I saw the movie when it came out. It was sort of a cult hit.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed the movie. I love the movie.
Kind of sacrilege here, but I still haven't seen it.
Oh, man.
I know. Total sacrilege.
You haven't seen the movie?
I know.
Jeez.
I'll get around to it.
Okay. So I saw the movie the year that it came out, and I just was fascinated with it. It was
really cool. I've seen of it, and everyone I've like talked to about it speaks highly of it. When I was in high school, my best friend in high school spoke about it like every day. She read the book, she watched the movie. Somehow I just didn't do that.
Jeez, man, make sure you get on that. Anyway, I saw the movie, really enjoyed it. I read the book immediately. Loved the book, absolutely loved it. I highly recommend it to anybody who's listening to this. If you've seen the movie Battle Royale, then check out the book. If you haven't seen the movie, obviously see the movie. You can see exactly where this principle came from.
Right.
To describe it in really rough terms for anyone who is not familiar with the movie's about
junior high school kids, right? On an island.
It's a near future dystopian picture of Japanese society, which right. includes an annual event where one group of school kids is randomly selected by the Japanese government and they're dropped onto an island. And in the drop off, they're given a random weapon, which in some cases are not weapons. Like one student gets a pot lid, you know, and his nickname is Pot Lid. And, you know, you get random items like yeah. You get a gun. Some people get a knife. They get a noose, you know, and so they just have to eliminate all the other students which are on the island or else they get killed.
Right.
And so the movie is a lot about the psychological trauma of having to, you know, look at your
classmates,
peers as yeah. someone who would kill you. And it's sort of like about the breakdown of society or the relationship between people who are competing with each other and how that relationship can be redefined when you're put into extreme circumstances.
And it kind of became a cult hit, right? And then the Hunger Games books and then movies kind of adapted this concept for, I would say, a younger audience.
A truly global audience.
Yeah,
but yeah, younger
global,
audience as
but
well.
Younger audience.
Right.
And it, as you say, global audience, it got really popular for years. And I think that's what helped spawn, you know, this Minecraft mod, which then, you know, more mods started to come out from this concept.
Did you see the Hunger Games movies?
I watched like one of them on a plane flight or something. Thought it was pretty unremarkable.
Do you remember which one it was?
It was maybe the second one.
Oh, man. You have not seen many movies related to this topic. I remember seeing Hunger Games, the first one, when I was on a road trip in the United States, and I saw it with a couple of friends. We had all seen Battle Royale before, and as soon as we exited the theater, all of us unanimously thought that was like a weak sauce Battle Royale.
Right. I don't know. It's just what I've heard and seen, the clips that I have seen of Battle Royale look really cool from just cinematography, acting, action, delivery of things look iconic. And the Hunger Games seemed like a typical Hollywood movie aimed at like, you know, 13 or 14 year olds, which is just not really appealing to me.
Battle Royale is dark and disturbing.
Yeah, it should
and
not
it's like
be
creepy and
for
Japanese.
Like a 13, 14 year old audience.
Yeah.
It's
Hunger
not...
Games is like an MTV music video.
Yeah.
In any case, so I feel like we've covered the movies, but the Hunger Games, the popularity of that led to a lot of game developers creating mods, which included sort of theme survival and scavenging themes, which are kind of basic elements of
right.
the Battle Royale genre in games. And as we've already mentioned, the Hunger Games mod for Minecraft was one of the first one of those. A couple others.
Notable.
One of the big ones was Arma 2.
Right, with Brendan Green, which we've discussed on the podcast before.
Exactly. In our PUBG podcast, we discussed Brendan Green. He is the creator of PUBG.
I don't think we can really talk about this topic without mentioning Brendan Green.
He's probably the most important single figure in this movement of games.
Absolutely. He had a number of mods for both Arma 2 and Arma 3 based around this concept and kind of trying to perfect what he thought the ideal version of this was, which would eventually become PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds or PUBG. Which is really bizarre because, you know, I mean, I personally think that a lot of other games coming out are doing a better job than the pioneer in this industry.
You know, what's interesting is that right now, I think PUBG has a player base, which is roughly comparable to
Fortnite.
Yeah, except Fortnite earns a lot more money.
Yeah, totally.
I think one of the biggest reasons why is because the PUBG player base, much of it has transitioned to mobile, especially in China where it's very popular.
Right, and they can't monetize the mobile version, right?
Exactly, because of the regulatory situation, which we described on a recent podcast where we talked about what's ailing the Chinese game industry. And I was just recently traveling through Southeast Asia, and I went to a video game sort of, you know, internet bar in Vietnam. And I went inside, just poked my head in just to kind of see what people were playing and what it was like.
Was it PUBG?
Everyone playing PUBG.
That's awesome.
Every single person in there.
That's really good that they're not playing Fortnite.
I felt like I'd gone through a time machine and I had gone back to 2017.
Yeah.
Because I remember in that year, 2017, we were playing PUBG a lot. There were many people in our CGF group.
We were playing PUBG at like a Wangba, you know? So we were around all the Chinese guys also playing PUBG and shouting in Chinese on their mics and stuff.
Yeah. So this genre has just evolved so quickly. It's funny to see a game from just a couple years ago. PUBG was released in 2017. To see it now in 2019 and think, wow, that's so old. You know, because people are still playing Counter-Strike.
So much has happened since then. Okay. Oh, and Counter-Strike has also added Battle Royale. Have you played that?
No. How does that work?
So it's a lot smaller scale. What happens is you pick a zone. You see the map and it's like 16 players on a much smaller island. And you have zones that you have to pick where you drop in. And once somebody else has picked the zone, you can't pick that zone.
Is this Global Offensive?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I would like to try that.
I have it installed on my computer. We can give it a go later.
Neat. Yeah, that sounds cool. It doesn't surprise me, though, because everything is adding a Battle Royale mode right now.
And some of the games that are adding it works. Some of them it doesn't. I would say in CS, it's a nice distraction from the main game, but it doesn't hold a candle to other Battle Royale games. But if you play CSGO a lot and just want a break from, you know, the normal team deathmatch or disarm the bomb or whatever, you know,
yeah,
it's a nice diversion. And one thing that's kind of cool is you get money in the game and you do scavenge and stuff. But when you get money, you can order a drone to deliver weapons to you. But then everybody can see the drone flying over to you. So it's kind of a risk, but you can get a really good weapon for it. But everybody knows exactly where you are.
That's interesting that such a big, popular, long-standing game like Counter-Strike Global Offensive can release a Battle Royale mode, and it's just so totally overshadowed by everything else which is happening.
Yeah, I don't think it basically had almost no coverage of it. It wasn't really a big announcement. I saw maybe like one or two videos popping up on YouTube on like the day of release. But otherwise, nobody was really talking about it or anything.
Interesting. You know, speaking of old games and sort of the origin of the Battle Royale space, I was reading there's a lengthy Battle Royale article on Wikipedia, which is specific to the lineage of games. And it mentions the Bomberman series in the 1990s.
Totally. I saw that too. That was interesting. And it is kind of, to an extent, understandable that it would.
Yeah,
it is. It's guys spawning in with nothing but a bomb and getting upgrades and power-ups and fighting to the last man standing.
There's a scavenging element. There's a survival element. There are multiple multiplayer game modes. Players all start with the same minimal abilities, collect power-ups. It's last man standing.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting to think of it in that way.
Never would have thought about it that way had I not read that, but
I wonder, you know, what other well-known games are there from decades ago that are just waiting to be sort of recontextualized? You know, it's like the Battle Royale genre blows up and now we can look back at Bomberman and say, oh yeah, that was an inspiration for a really big influential movement in modern games.
All right, now we're ready for some Pac-Man or Rampage.
Who knows? We just talked about Pac-Man in our recent podcast about artificial intelligence.
Which I think you can't talk about AI without mentioning that.
Did you ever play Arma 2?
Did I? No.
Yeah, I didn't play it either. But it had a couple of really popular mods, one of which was the zombie one, right? DayZ?
Yes.
Yeah, DayZ was a mod in Arma 2, and then later it was broken out into a full game. And I think it became pretty successful on Steam, although it was quite buggy, which obviously PUBG was as well. PUBG, I mean, we've talked about it at great length on this podcast before, but I feel like it's important that we kind of retread some of those steps to define like the role that game played.
What was the mod? Well, Brendan Green, I think, worked on Survival of the King or something with H1Z1 mod and left that. That was the last thing he was working on before he left that to work on PUBG.
Right, and that was with Bluehole in South Korea. Right. They wanted to develop a game which was entirely devoted to the idea of a Battle Royale game, not just a mod, not an addition.
Well, H1Z1 actually diverged into two totally separate teams, one working on, and they became standalone game versions of the game. So one team was entirely devoted to the Battle Royale version of the game, Survival of the King, or what, whatever it was. I forget the name right now. And the other one to the Survival zombie mode of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And Brendan Green was fronting the, he was a creative director, I think, on the H1Z1 Battle Royale thing before he was contacted by Bluehole. He was flown over to South Korea, met with them, and asked to be creative director of PUBG.
Right.
So, and then PUBG started the kind of really bringing, PUBG was, I think, where Battle Royale really entered the public light.
That was the flashpoint for it to become a mainstream genre.
Right.
And it's interesting flashpoint because the game did so many things right and so many things badly. It's such a mixed bag in terms of exciting, dynamic gameplay, which was very tense, very memorable, a lot of fun, really engaging. People were really, really hooked on that game.
Yeah, well, Bluehole, I don't think, was ready for the sheer numbers that they had. They had expected something. They had to push back a lot of deadlines. I think they probably had server-side issues with things because they were not expecting so many people to be on there as early as it was.
Well, I mean, even 6 months after the game was a smash hit, it was the number one game on Steam. It had the most concurrent players of any game in the history of Steam. Even at that point, they still seemed woefully unequipped
totally
to handle the stresses and the difficulties and the challenges of managing an online game with that many people.
Do you know how big Bluehole is?
No.
I'm not sure, but I mean, obviously it's nowhere on the scale of something like EA or something.
Yeah, well, Bluehole is probably a couple hundred people, I'm guessing, but yeah. EA has 10,000 employees, and I mean, studios all around the world in probably 15 different countries.
And even EA is still struggling with cheaters and stuff like that in Apex Legends.
Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to Apex. That's a big topic. But on PUBG, I mean, some of the problems which come to mind immediately, it was really terribly optimized on PC. There was an Xbox One X port, which was horribly optimized. It was slow to connect and get in a game in China. It required an accelerator.
You remember it before they added the vaulting mechanics?
I remember. Yeah. So
clunky, dude.
Well, even after, it was completely clunky. But it's funny that a major update in PUBG was the vaulting update, which allows you to jump over obstacles which are in the path of your character.
Yeah.
And it's so funny now that such a simple, obvious thing is like a major feature, which is highly anticipated. And when it came out, it's like, oh, you can vault over things now. It's like, whoa, man. Really, really funny.
I mean, climb something that's like shoulder height now.
Yeah, it was game just so changer. So janky, so clunky. The performance was so bad. I mean, on my PC,
so poorly optimized.
I had to turn it on low on 1080p, like turn all the visual effects down just to get it to run at a playable frame rate. And I don't have like a really powerful gaming PC, but that's the only game I've ever had to do that for, really.
And the cheaters on there were just like mind-boggling at the level of cheaters. And then they later added the kill cam feature.
Yeah.
So you would see people just like shooting up in the sky and getting headshots on you, or like automatically snapping and following you walking, like their aim following you walking through a building until you dipped in front of a window, bam.
Yeah, and you would report cheaters. Didn't really seem to do much. There seemed to be an infinite quantity of cheaters. The more you report, the more appear. It just seemed like a problem that would sort of never go away, and it feels like it never really did go away. Maybe in the mobile version, there are not as many cheaters as the PC version, but the PC version, I mean,
I would imagine cheating on mobile would be a little bit more difficult.
Actually, I think what a lot of people are doing is they're getting keyboard and mouse peripherals for mobile.
That's pretty whack.
Yeah, so they have like way greater accuracy and precision than anybody who's playing with their thumbs. But in any case,
but
PUBG,
I still think that's infinitely better than having like playing with a bunch of people with aimbots and stuff.
No question. Yeah. I mean, there's not even a debate over that. In any case, so PUBG was a whole interesting experience. I think there are still a couple people in the CGF group who might be playing PUBG, but basically,
Carl said he still gets on every now and then just because he prefers the realism and the pacing of the game, which is far different from something like Apex or Blackout, I think, which are much just the movement mechanics.
I think the game which made PUBG completely obsolete overnight was Call of Duty Black Ops 4 Blackout. such a mouthful.
Yeah.
Compared to like Apex, yeah. You know, it's like Call of Duty Black Ops 4 Blackout. Anyway, Call of Duty added a Battle Royale mode, which is one of the three gameplay modes in the latest iteration of Call of Duty, which is called Black Ops 4.
Yeah. And it's blah, blah, blah.
And it's really good. It's basically a not broken version of PUBG. It really
like
didn't.
10 years of map history and stuff in one map, pulling resources from various Call of Duty games and putting them in the map, which is really cool. They also include zombies, which is a cool mechanic if you encounter them. But it's still got the realism. I mean, maybe not necessarily on the same way that PUBG does, but it's still fairly realistic with
pretty
bullet
close.
Drop-off.
I mean, the map doesn't mean much to me. Yeah. I'm not like a Call of Duty fanatic. I'm not like picking out buildings on the map for,
but
you know.
It's interesting, I think, just going around it. And if you're into it, then it's kind of cool.
I guess. I mean, the gameplay is basically identical to PUBG, but it's not filled with cheaters and it runs at an acceptable frame rate
and
it looks pretty good.
And the movement mechanics are just so much smoother, dude.
Yeah, it's just a vastly improved version. But it feels like sort of the next evolution, you know?
Yeah.
And then the next one after that is Apex.
Yeah.
You know, one obviously that we're skipping over here is Fortnite.
Yeah.
You know, Fortnite was really the biggest battle royale game of 2018. I mean, it's still the biggest now, I think, until Apex overtakes it.
Do you even floss, bro? Do you floss moves? You
know? I was in the United States a couple months ago for Christmas, and I saw my cousin's son do the floss dance.
Oh God!
And he was like five. He's like 5 years old. No, I mean it was like cute. You know, he's like a little kid. He like really enjoys the dance. I don't even know if he plays Fortnite, to be honest. But it really hit it home to me like how big of a cultural phenomenon Fortnite is and the flossing dance. So for anyone who doesn't know, there's a dance, an emote, which was popularized by being included in Fortnite, which is a dance, which is loved and hated by many people. Did you see the creator of the flossing dance do it on New Year's Eve in Times Square, New York City?
No.
Really funny. He's on stage. I forget the name of the guy who made the dance, but he's a famous guy now because his dance was included in Fortnite. And he was on this large platform at Times Square, New York City, midnight, drop of the apple. And he's on a microphone and he's like doing the flossing dance. He's like, come on, guys, get into the flossing dance. And there's a crowd of like 500 people who are all just staring at him like, no. And he's like, I don't see enough movement. I don't see enough movement. And he's like frantically doing the flossing dance. And everyone's like, nope, not doing it. It's just maximum cringe.
Wow.
But in any case, Fortnite has just been this massive cultural phenomenon. It's become so popular. Have you ever seen Ninja on Twitch, by the way? Are you familiar with Ninja?
I'm familiar with him. He's a popular streamer and like just mad skills.
Insane skills.
Yeah, he's one of his, up there with like Shroud and stuff.
One of his most famous streams was with Drake.
Yeah.
And with Kim.com.
Right.
And I watched that one. Highly entertaining. His skills are just out of control.
That broke records.
Yeah.
And that wasn't broken again until later, I think also in Fortnite, by another a Spanish YouTuber who played with 99 other YouTubers and broke the Ninja with Drake one. And they had like almost 0.2 or 0.3 million more viewers than they had with the Ninja Drake one.
Interesting.
Which is like a lot of viewers.
Especially for Twitch.
Yeah.
But he has like how many, 20 million followers on YouTube? Amazing. Yeah,
crazy.
I mean, the following is just absolutely incredible.
Seems really hard though, just having to play Fortnite so much and be interesting to people, you know?
Yeah, you know, Fortnite is not our bag really. So we've both played Fortnite. It wasn't really for me. I think you feel the same way. I think that's why that topic has not been explored at much depth on this podcast.
I mean, I know that there are people in our groups that like it, such as Dan and Roger and a few other people, but I just can't get past the aesthetic and I don't really like the building mechanics and stuff. If I want to build something, I'll play the forest or I would buy Rust or something and get into a survival game or something as opposed to frantically building while trying to avoid getting shot at.
Right. So I think I can speak for the both of us by saying we both really loved PUBG. We got really into that. Fortnite, kind of not our thing. Black Ops Blackout mode, really, really good. We got into that for a while, enjoyed that quite a bit. And then Apex feels like really the next big evolution of the Battle Royale genre.
The ping system is so good in that, and the movement it feels so good being able to just like slide down a hill in that game.
Yeah, so for anyone who's unfamiliar, Apex is the latest game, which was published by Electronic Arts. It's developed by Respawn, which is the studio that made the Titanfall series.
And this is set in the Titanfall universe, technically.
Right, and it's a game which is available for free on Windows, PS4, Xbox One, and it's coming to mobile later this year in 2019.
Wonder if there'll be crossplay.
That's a good question. You know, I think it's pretty likely. I think that crossplay is becoming increasingly prevalent. It's becoming more and more common.
So does that mean we're going to have PC cheaters on PS4?
Hopefully not. Yeah, but that's a good question. Not. That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, questions like that, will they be able to mitigate the issue of cheaters on the PC version of Apex, which is a problem right now? And how will that influence the prospect of doing crossplay? Because the current situation right now, and we have a couple dozen people who are playing Apex in the CGF group, I think, which is roughly split between PC and PS4. And the PC players are basically constantly complaining about issues with the game. Issues with the launcher, which is EA's Origin.
Also, just spawning into games where they are playing with bots that are just spamming messages. Just, you know, they've got a recording looping over and over in Chinese, just being like, buy our aimbots, or things like that.
I struggle to think of something more infuriating than that.
Dude, and they're not even playing. So you're now stuck on a team with like two bots that aren't going to help you at all.
Yeah, you join a lobby and it's like a message which is on repeat talking about aimbots. It seems like it's just spreading the worst thing ever. So anyway, hearing about all that and all the issues with Origin, the game crashing, the performance being
bad.
It's a long list of issues with the PC version of Apex. And you're insulated from basically all of them if you're playing on PS4. I haven't heard of anyone on PS4 encountering a single cheater. I haven't heard of anyone encountering a bot. There's no recorded messages like that. There's no third-party launcher required, obviously, on PS4. The performance is great. The game is fun. Basically works without issue on PS4.
Totally, dude. It's really, really a pleasant surprise. It works so well, even for us within China, although we do have these accelerators helping us. But it works really well. The game itself is solid, and it's free. It was like a really pleasant surprise. No cheaters or anything, but everyone I know has something negative to say about playing on PC.
Yeah.
And I've not heard anyone complain about the PS4 version once.
Right. Also, as we haven't mentioned, it is a hero shooter, a little bit similar to Overwatch. There are 8 different playable characters in Apex Legends.
And
the Legends. Two of them are locked, although you don't need to actually make a purchase to unlock them, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I have played Apex for, I don't even know how long, but I would guess like
20 hours,
probably less than that. I would say probably 15, 10 hours, something like that. And okay. I was almost at the point where I could unlock one of the two locked characters.
But you've given it up now, right? You said you locked down like four kills and you're just like, I don't want to go down this endless multiplayer like time suck.
Right. So I think that Apex, I can acknowledge these two things at the same time. First of all, it's phenomenally fun. It's really well designed. It's really fun to play. As long as you have an accelerator, it works really great in China on PS4. And number two, it's basically an infinite time suck. And I'm a little bit fearful of that. I've got a lot of other games which I'd like to get through. And I feel that with Apex always there and people always playing it, it's just a little bit too much of a temptation.
But that's like any multiplayer game, at least any multiplayer game with a large player base, is that you can get on anytime and play as long as you want because there's a large player base. You always got buddies playing. And on one hand, that's kind of cool. You always got people to play with. But on the other hand, it's kind of a time suck. So I think if you continue to play a game like that, the best way to get it, just, you know, play one day a week or something.
Now, I think I'll just delete those games. Not interested in World of Warcraft, not interested in Fortnite. I think I'm done with Apex. Also, the real challenge with these games, I mean, what you're striving for the whole time is to get a win. You play in squads of three people on Apex, and it's kind of difficult to win. I mean, unless you're really good at the game or you're playing with people who are really good. So I played for, I don't know, 10 hours or some many hours before I beat the game. And once I got linked with some people who were actually good, then I started winning a lot. And once I had won four times consecutively, I felt like, okay, I'm never going to, you know, achieve this again, probably. And I feel really
like
satisfied.
You'll endlessly be just trying to do that, and it's just kind of a waste of time.
Well, I've just had so much fun playing it. Yeah. I don't regret playing it for a moment, but I feel like I've gotten enough enjoyment out of it to just be happy with that experience and just move on. And that's why I deleted the game.
One thing that I think that I really like about PUBG and Blackout and a lot of other games is the randomness of loot that you encounter. And on Apex, you've got like different tier loot locations. You don't know what loot you're going to get there, but you know that like this is a high tier loot. This is a, you know, you're only going to get like a shitty Mozambique here or something, you know, which is a weird pistol shotgun thing or whatever. But like that leads to a lot of people typically like following a similar strategy every round. Whereas with like Blackout, dude, we just like wing it every single time, which is kind of exciting and fun.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Apex works really well. And I think kudos to you getting those four consecutive wins. I won my second match in the game ever and haven't been able to do it again since.
Yeah, so as you get to the end of the game, it gets very tense, very exciting, kind of similar to PUBG and Blackout in that the circles get smaller. You have to get in, you know, closer proximity to your enemies. You don't know where they are. And in Apex, one twist which they throw in is you don't know how many people are left surviving.
Right, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, at the final stage, you're not sure if there's one person or four people. You just don't know. So it makes it a little bit less predictable, and it sort of ratchets up the tension just a bit. Although in Apex, you are necessarily playing with, you know, two other people or teammates at least. And so it's not just about you by yourself, as it often was in PUBG and in Blackout.
I'm assuming that they have intentions to add a solo mode to the game at some point, probably, though.
I would be surprised if they do.
I really like the squad mechanics, especially with the ping system. Even if you don't have a microphone, like communicate, all the communication that you need to do in the game happens so quickly, and it's so simple to do so, to communicate with your teammates.
Can you describe the ping system for people who aren't familiar with what that is?
So you've got one button which is used for pinging, and you can hold the button down to bring up a circle. Like,
what is pinging?
It's marking an object and on the map and visibly in the UI for your other teammates to see. You can ping enemies, you can ping ammo, ping gear, loot or whatever for people to come get. You can let them know that you think an enemy's been here or that you're going to guard here, you're looking over here, whatever. Any sort of communication that you might want to do in a team-based shooter, you can communicate immediately to your teammates.
Yeah, so it eliminates a lot of the stuff like I've got armor here, I've got a weapon here, or there's ammo here, which was really common in Blackout or in PUBG.
In fact, I would say it's probably even better than voice chat, because you can mark specifically. You don't have to communicate like, I think I saw an enemy at like 235 east or something.
Yeah.
But I know that you are like two clicks south of me, so it might be, you know, or something like that.
That was
really
challenging in PUBG. It's like I've got an enemy at like, you know, 75 degrees, and you're like, hold on, what? And you're like looking up at the compass, and you're just trying to do the math and figure it out. You're sort of vulnerable as you're sort of bumbling with this,
which can be exciting, but it's you know, you really require to. I mean, it just makes it so simple with any skill level. It makes it accessible to like any skill level of player to work together with other teammates.
It feels like this is a huge mechanical upgrade, to the degree to which if you go back and play Blackout, which I've done since Apex came out, it feels weird. I don't have these conveniences. So it feels like this is just almost obsolete now, you know? Yeah. Even in Blackout, when you jump out of the helicopter, you're separate from your teammates and you have to coordinate on where you land.
Such a simple thing, but really, really nice.
Yeah, and one person will mess it up and you're separated and it kind of makes it difficult. Whereas in Apex, one of the conveniences which it offers, which I think makes everything else sort of obsolete, is that one person is the jump master and they control the direction and movement of all three of the players.
You can choose to drop solo if you want to, but I mean, it's so nice to just not have to worry about that and drop as a team, as opposed to, what do you mean you already dropped? Oh, damn it. Like, you know,
which was really common.
Yeah. And also the other thing is the item management in Apex is so streamlined, you know, like a PUBG blackout, you find yourself just like fumbling through menus, seeing what items you have and which weapon. If you pick up a new weapon, it automatically switches over whatever attachments you have on that gun to the new weapon. It tells you if you have better gear, so you don't have to pick up unnecessary things. It's just really slick. Everything is streamlined that, like, we didn't even really think too much about before, but now that we have Apex, it's like, as you said, going back to Blackout or going back to PUBG even feels archaic.
Yeah, and it's only been a month since this game was released. Apex Legends was announced by Electronic Arts just over a month ago on February 4th, 2019, which was right before they announced their quarterly financial results, which did not meet expectations and caused the EA stock to drop 13%. But within weeks of that, the popularity of Apex Legends spread and analysts saw the game as potentially one of the biggest games of 2019.
Huge
and
growth.
Since then, the EA stock has seen its largest stock growth since 2014.
Wow.
Based just on the Apex. Success of Apex. Yeah, the game has got 25 million players within the first week, I believe.
This is like 72 hours, I think. It's like 3 days.
I think it was it 25 million within that period of time?
Yeah, I think so.
Wow. Well, remarkable success of this game, which makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's a really good game and it's free. It's kind of amazing what you can get in a free game these days.
Absolutely. It's so impressive. And it makes me think about things like, God damn, EA was like selling Battlefront 2 for $60 and then selling you all this DLC and having microtransactions and Black Ops were, you know, paying $60 and then another $60 for the DLC. Like,
well, Black Ops is so much more than just a battle royale game.
True.
I mean, that's one third of the game.
True. But I mean, it's just like insane that we can get such a quality AAA experience for free, you know, and not be required to pay anything.
Yeah,
if we don't want to.
It's a little hard to imagine, like, who's buying Overwatch now, you know, or who is buying these other similar games which cost a significant amount of money. When you're compared to Apex, which is super popular, has tons of players, really well designed, functional, just it's sort of the whole package.
Totally. I mean, Overwatch does have a stable player base, though, so I'm sure people who are into it are just sticking with it, you know? But
I would assume, I haven't seen the numbers on this, but it has to be a declining player base as people transition over to Apex. I think we'll see a similar phenomenon, you know, when Blackout came out, the PUBG user base dropped substantially because people are just moving on to the newer, better thing.
Totally.
And I feel like Apex is going to be that situation, especially since there's basically no friction for the game because it's free.
Yeah.
So if you're like an Overwatch player, there's really no reason to not check it out.
Now, I heard that Fortnite actually adopted the ping system since Apex came out. They have added a similar ping system. And when Apex dropped, Blackout offered double XP, and Fortnite offered like a bunch of incentives to try to keep people on it. I'm sure they suffered a hit from Apex coming out.
Sure, of course. Anything else to say about Apex before we move on?
How about you tell me what your favorite legend is?
Bloodhound. Bloodhound's my favorite legend.
For sure, dude. Me too.
Yeah. So each legend has a unique ability. Bloodhound's ability is sort of a tracking ability. He's a little bit like the Predator.
Yeah, really.
He has like
cool.
Some kind of like techno arm controller. So he hits a few buttons on his arm, and then you have the ability to see enemies through walls, and you can also see loot and different things. You can travel faster.
And his passive ability is just like seeing footprints and stuff, so you can track enemies and then use his ultimate ability to just like go up and rage on them. You become the second fastest legend in the game.
Yeah, it's really cool that the game has so many different characters, which you can get into, really a lot of strategic depth in the game.
Absolutely.
Almost similar to Rainbow Six Siege.
Yeah.
Maybe not quite as intense as that in terms of like the penalty for making a mistake is like instant death, like it is in Rainbow Six Siege often. But
which is really nice, the respawn mechanic that they added in the respawn mechanic that Respawn, the developers, added to Apex, where when you go down, your teammates have the ability to pick up your tag or whatever and can go to a location on the map to call you back into the game.
Right. But then when they come back into the game, they come back in on a craft, which everyone can see, yeah, and they come in with no weapons. So you're kind of like a big target.
Potentially totally fucked.
Yeah. So anyway, Apex, pretty cool. Check it out. I mean, it's hard to think of a reason why someone shouldn't check it out. I'll say this, though. If you have a propensity to get addicted or drawn into perpetual online games, look out for this one.
Yeah, super dangerous.
Yeah, super dangerous.
Some of the people have over 100 hours that we're playing with.
Oh, easily. Yeah. I mean, I notice when I log into my PS4, I see like the same people on Apex like all
every
the time.
Day.
Like no matter what time of day. Yeah, exactly. People are getting sucked into this game big time. And it's easy to see why.
Yeah.
One thing which I wanted to mention on this podcast is my favorite recent iteration of the Battle Royale movement, which is Tetris 99.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. What a cool move on Nintendo's part after delivering such a totally disappointing online service.
Yeah.
Tetris 99 is really a cool concept, super addictive, really fun to play. Never ever would have thought, if you asked me what direction I would see Battle Royale kind of developing, what kind of concepts we would see, Tetris would have been probably the last thing I would have thought about. And it came out of nowhere.
Yeah, it came out of nowhere. It hasn't even been a month since it was released. It was released in the middle of a Nintendo Direct on February 13th of this year. And really came out of nowhere. I mean, it was announced and released at the same time. So it was like, you know, Battle Royale Tetris, it's available now. And everyone's like, what? You know, so all of a sudden it just became sort of a hit immediately. And it's a free game, 100% free, as long as you're a Nintendo Online subscriber. So, and that's been a little bit controversial. We've talked about the value proposition of the Nintendo Switch Online service, which is not that great, to be honest. And both of us have hacked our Switches as a result of that. And we recorded a podcast on that. But
right,
this seems like the first really valuable, unique thing which Nintendo Switch Online has offered.
Totally.
So that's cool for people who haven't hacked their Switch and they're using the online service, which is only $20 a year. Then this is the best thing available on
totally
that service. So for anyone who can't guess what this means, Tetris 99 is a Battle Royale style multiplayer Tetris game in which 99 players play against each other at the same time with the aim of being the last player remaining.
On that note, though, I think, are there any other concepts you would like to see in the Battle Royale genre? Somebody else, when we were in discussion, was like, man, we should have a Kung Fu Battle Royale. And like that, who knows how that would work out, but might be cool. I've seen a couple of games, not to great success, do vehicular combat, but something like Twisted Metal in Battle Royale might be cool. There's a game on Steam. It's got like a dead player base already, but it's basically Mad Max Battle Royale, which is kind of cool.
I think Nintendo should continue in the same vein as Tetris 99, and it should make more retro games into Battle Royale spinoffs. And I think a good one which is compatible with that would be Balloon Fight.
Totally, that would be
But
cool.
Maybe some retro games like that, maybe some like 8 or even 16-bit games might be a good match to be sort of reinvented or to have sort of a new injection of this, you know, popular gameplay aesthetic.
Have you heard of Spellforce?
No.
So Spellforce is like just like basically Harry Potter Battle Royale. It's just like wizards combining spells. It's kind of like Magicka, where like different spells and stuff can combine synergistically and create new spells. And a huge Battle Royale thing where you're just jumping and flying around, shooting giant boulders, launching fireballs and stuff. And that looks like that could shape up to potentially be a pretty cool game. And it's got a slowly growing player base. I don't think we'll see it turn into anything like Apex or anything, but it could.
What platform is that on?
I think it's going to be on PS4, Xbox, and it's on PC.
Interesting. Haven't heard of that.
Yeah, take a look at it. And we also have Microsoft trying to get into the Battle Royale field with the Darwin Project, I think, which is makes me think of Bloodhound from Apex, where you can track enemies through the snow and follow their footprints and things like that.
Interesting.
So on that note, what other games are you playing recently?
Recently, I've been playing the Dope Game on Steam.
Got to sell that weed, bro. Nothing like dropping. How much money did you drop on the ground? Just carrying in your...
Oh, 1.2 million today.
Just pocket change.
Yeah. Well, it's a fraction of what I have. I'm just trying to pick, you know, the screen which says, oh, you were chased by someone with a baseball bat and you dropped 1.2 million. And I'm like, oh, yeah. Well, you know, when you have $5 million on your body, then you're liable to drop a million.
Yeah.
But anyway, this game is a Steam game, which is a modern recreation of Drug Wars, which is the old TI-82 Texas Instruments calculator game where you're a drug dealer. You're moving around to different locations. You're buying and selling different narcotics in different locations and trying to make a profit, avoid cops. It's a silly game. It's a little bit like a Flash game. Not impressive graphically. And actually, even in terms of gameplay, it really doesn't offer anything new over...
It's just simple
Drug Wars.
Fun, right?
It's just simple fun. Yeah. That's exactly right. I mean, you're just clicking through the game. That's basically all there is to it. And I'm shooting to finish the game completely. And you first have to complete, you know, challenges based on a different number of days, which you have to survive. So first you survive for like 10 days and then 30 days and then 60 days, 90 days.
Cool.
And I'm up to like 200 days or something, which I think is the last challenge. And it's pretty tough because I'm at the point now where cops are chasing me.
Dropping, you know, huge amounts of cash on the ground.
Well, I'm only doing cocaine because it's like the most valuable drug in the game. And so I'm just dealing with like huge amounts of like extremely valuable drugs. And cops, I'm notoriety with cops, right? Because I'm such a big dealer. So cops are routinely hassling me. And sometimes I'm trying to run from them and dropping millions in the process, or I can't get away and a scuffle ensues and I have to shoot them and usually kill them with like my rocket launcher or my minigun. And whenever I kill a cop, then my notoriety goes even higher and then more cops come. And so it's like an escalating
cycle,
like cop killing situation.
Right.
So anyway, I've been playing that and I've also been playing Apex until I quit that recently.
Right.
And there are a couple new PS Plus games for this month, which were just released last night.
Talking about getting on COD 4 remastered tonight.
Yeah, that's, I mean, considered by many to be the best Call of Duty game ever made.
Totally.
I would agree with that probably. And so the remaster version of that is available for free now. And I played the original one. The story was great. It's a lot of fun. And, you know, hey, I'm interested in checking it out, seeing what it's like, and if my impression of it has changed.
Totally. For me, well, and you, we just started out Alienation as per a buddy of ours recommendation. Really cool, simple, straightforward, you know, twin stick shooter. Rewarding and fun. And reminds you a little bit of Diablo, you said, right?
Yeah, definitely reminds me a little bit of Diablo.
It's kind of cool, loot-based shooter, I guess. So interesting. I like that. I just finally beat Kingdom New Lands. Mm-hmm. And maybe going to take a break from Kingdom because it's, you know how it goes. It just kind of gets a little bit repetitive.
Super repetitive.
So I'm going to take a break from Kingdom and try to finally finish up Red Dead. And I've started out the new Toe Jam and Earl, which is so cool. You wanted to hear a little bit about it?
Yeah, describe it.
So it's really similar to the first game. You start out in a fixed world. Once you get to level 10 through the fixed world on normal difficulty, you can open up
kind of game is it?
So what you do is you navigate a level of this world that you shake trees and stuff and get gifts. And you can open these gifts, which give you items like wings or spring shoes or things. And there are earthlings around the space. Some can be good and help you. Some can be bad and maybe try to attack you or whatever.
What's the objective of the game? Who are you?
So the object, you're Toe Jam or Earl or I think Letitia or Latanya. And you can be old school Earl or old school Toe Jam if you want to. Each character has different stats and some special ability or something. And the goal of the game is, as you progress through the levels, there are 25 different stages that keep stacking on top of each other. And different levels will have spaceship parts on them. And you have to get to level 25 and pick up spaceship parts as you go along to, I guess, get off of Earth.
So you play an alien who's trying to exit Earth by reassembling a spaceship.
Correct.
Yeah.
And the gameplay just involves... It's really simple, straightforward, but... I don't know, it's charming and fun.
Nice.
A little bit quirky, and it's very, very similar to the first Toe Jam and Earl.
Cool. Looking forward to checking it out.
Cool.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to the podcast. We really enjoyed doing sort of a recap of the Battle Royale genre for the last couple of years. This is a topic which we've looked at multiple times on this podcast, but it's nice to have sort of a more eagle eye, comprehensive look at the subject in this conversation. If you're interested in checking out more episodes of the podcast, you can find them on our website at chundugaming.com or in whatever app you listen to podcasts with. Thanks.
Later.